know, we know we got it. We know, we know.
Good morning, Mission. You are listening to Listen Local this morning. I am your host, Julian Mark, and I'm here with my managing editor, Joe Eskenazi. How are you doing, Joe?
I am all right. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I don't think I had enough coffee.
We didn't have, we definitely had zero coffee. So, like, you know, it becomes, you know, if you divide by zero, it becomes mathematically impossible. And if you don't get enough coffee, you become, you know, practically impossible. So it all works out.
But I think this show will work out. I mean, we're going to be talking about a bit of dysfunction this morning. Hopefully, you know, the coffee didn't, you know, won't make us too dysfunctional.
That's for sure.
Lack thereof.
Yeah, well, Muni got me here on time. And you know, more people should say that. Because the thing about Muni is it's like a football offensive lineman. People very rarely point out, like, you know, he's blocking great today. He's doing a great job, today, you know, with his exchanges to the quarterback and all that kind of stuff. They're just like, oh, he was holding, you know, like only when you screw up are you called out. And so very rarely your excellence or even your acceptability are not commented on. It's only your unacceptability, and that's Muni.
But it was Muni messed up big time. It pretty much fumbled, like, you know, in a very sort of important playoff game, or the equivalent thereof. What happened?
This was Ernest Biner fumbling at the at the goal line, which is a reference that will certainly cause many Titan sphincters in the Cleveland region. What happened is that Muni closed the Twin Peaks Tunnel, which the K, L, and M route through in order to get to West Portal.
And why were they closing the tunnel?
That tunnel's a century old. So, like,
uh-huh,
you know,
right
now. it's not like it was a disaster, but it's always a good idea to do planned maintenance on a century-old tunnel. And, right. and things did not go as planned, and we'll get to that, though it did reopen on time. And that was June 25th. Now, at least 10 months ahead of time, Muni higher-ups were told, if you've got too many things going on at once, if you close the tunnel and you're not prepared for it, we're not going to have enough operators and vehicles. We're not going to be able to make it up. It'll be severe service problems. So, you know, you've got 10 months and possibly years, you know, before someone writes it down and puts it in a nice official memo that can be public record requested,
right,
to cope for this. And again, you know, it wasn't like the tunnel caved in. If there was not a viable plan, you think you could put it off until, you know, at least short term until you have one. Again, you know, putting off repairs in a century-old tunnel isn't a great idea, but neither is what came next. And so what happened was Muni had extensive publicity for people who rode these lines, the impacted lines, the KLM. We're going to be closing the tunnel. There's going to be a bus shuttles instead. You know, here's how it'll work. They had videos. They had publicity material. They had flyers. It was, you know, that said, they still, you know, people were still taken aback, and many people did not realize the tunnel was closing until there was an article in the Chronicle 2 days before it happened.
You know, but I have to say, you know, I knew it was happening. You know, when I actually took the shuttles, it was a pretty fast, you know, service. You know, everything was very efficient, you know, if you're coming from the west side of the city.
The problem was that they took those buses from the other lines in the city, and they didn't tell any of the people on those lines, here's what's happening.
And which lines? Which,
all around, you know, and some of the ones that were impacted the greatest were some of the trunk lines, the major lines, and some of the bigger lines, like the 38 Geary, had some days, and I did a public records request for missed service on Mondays, which is when you can tell. On the 38 Geary, you had almost 30% service cuts some days because of missed service hours.
And how many people, I mean, does this, I mean, just like off the top of your head, maybe as an estimation, how many people does this strand? I mean, does this...
Thousands, you know, high-end tens of thousands. And certainly hundreds of thousands over the course of, if not more, over the course of 2 months, which is what it was. So, you know, for months, people are just kind of thinking, like, what's going wrong here? It's kind of like raising the temperature of the water that, you know, like, you know, eventually you're boiling and something's very bad. But, you know, for a while there, it's like, what's going wrong here? Because a 10% service cut even is very significant, but you may not feel it. You might just think like, you know, the bus was late or the bus was very crowded, etc. But, you know, 30%, people are wondering, like, what's going on here? And why are there such waits? You know, why is the bus so full when it comes?
Right, and it's like they're long waits, it sounds like.
You're having fewer buses. You're having fewer buses doing the same amount of service, and, like, there's no two ways about it. You know, that's a service cut. And, you know, when the buses come, they tend to be fuller because, you know, this is not complicated.
Right.
So, you know, people are just wondering, like, what's going on here? Now, again, Muni got me here on time today. Everything was perfectly acceptable, you know? And, you know, this is a radio show. It starts at 9:30. But, you know, in your line of work and mine, most of the time, if you're a few minutes late here or there, it's okay. You know, I'm not going to get bawled out by the shift manager at the subway. But there are people who rely on Muni for that, and they were affected. So it's the most vulnerable among us who are affected when you start jerking around with public transit.
And so, you know, exactly, you know, what was the cause of this, and where did, you know, what did Muni actually, you know?
Well, they haphazardly siphoned drivers and buses off of the trunk lines in order to serve the impacted train lines.
Right.
And you can argue, you know, I don't know the mindset of why they did what they did, but at some point it's not important because of what came next is that they didn't tell anybody. Even the mayor's office, my sources tell me the mayor's office was not called until like right before this was happening. It was a fait accompli. That is a pretty brazen move. You don't keep the mayor in the dark about these kinds of things and expect to just, you know, skate. And, you know, more than that, you don't shine the riding public as Muni did. They were very clear about what would happen to the people who were riding trains into the city's leafier, greener neighborhoods, but they did not let people taking the 38, taking the 8, taking the 9, taking the 14, taking the 49 know what was going on. And they just had to, these people just had to fulminate about bad Muni service. They had no idea why. And, you know, something that drivers will say is, of course, it comes out on them.
They're the ones who are the forward-facing people.
Right. So you know, like, you know, what if, you know, was Muni being malicious? Was it being incompetent?
Okay. I mean, if with the years of head time, this is the best solution you can come up with, that's not great. But let's say that it is the best solution you can come up with is to rob Peter to pay Paul, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're still at fault for not telling anybody you're doing this.
Right.
That's a big problem.
Right.
You know, that's a lack of communications. Muni has a communication staff that can communicate. So, you know, it's not their fault.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were not tasked to do this. So, you know, I looked real hard. There were no messages about, you know, the buses being taken off of the major lines.
Well, why didn't they just, you know, train more drivers? Why didn't they, you know,
was the problem itself.
Right.
They weren't able to get that done in time, or at least, you know, that wasn't the initiative. There are a lot of things we can look back and say, why didn't they do A, B, and C?
Right.
If Muni had asked for more money, you know, a year ahead of time, anticipating this, they probably would have gotten it. And with that money, you could have done a lot of things.
Right.
You know, you could have brought people out of retirement.
Right.
You know, you could have done any number of things.
So now, on top of, you know, all of these drivers being stranded on these, you know, really populated lines. On these lines, you know, and they're fixing, you know, all of this is for the sake of this tunnel. And what's, you know, after all of this news breaks, what then happens at the tunnel?
So right as news was reported, first in the Examiner and then in Mission Local, we had a real smoking gun, which was a poster that hung up in one of the bus yards that said, here are the runs that are going to be canceled so that they can service the tunnel.
Right.
So right as it's being reported in major media, and right as the general public is able to equate, like, oh, this crappy service is because they are juggling buses because of the tunnel being closed, and the tunnel is coming up on you know, the job is about to end, a worker is crushed to death in a steel beam falling upon him, an incident within the Twin Peaks tunnel. Named Patrick Ricketts. I mean, construction sites are inherently, you know, this is not a place that you would have a preschool. It's there is a level of danger
right.
on every construction site, even ones that are fastidiously operated.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's very hard to ignore the fact that right as the deadline is approaching,
and when was this?
This was in late. When was this?
It
was
like maybe it was in third August. Week of August.
Yeah, yeah, it was in August, and it was with about 2 weeks to go into, you know, in the project, and the man's widow telling, you know, it was translated back to the Examiner. The man's widow, one of the first things that she said was, "Well, it was a rush job." You know, it was a rush job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we don't know what happened. That's what investigations are for. But it's very hard to ignore the circumstances that, you know, the public is finally starting to realize, oh, because this tunnel is closing and because they're juggling buses, service is terrible. They didn't tell anybody. It's a scandal. And right then and there, you know, with them rushing to alleviate this situation, this man is killed.
And, you know, it turns out that, you know, he's, you know, the jury is still out on why he, you know.
Yeah, that's what investigations are for. But what we do know is that Shimmick Construction, in the pre-bid questionnaire obtained by myself and other members of the media, they very clearly said no when asked, did you have any serious and willful safety violations in the past decade? They had several. They had at least three serious and willful safety violations in the past decade. They are appealing them all. And so, like, there could be some legal explanation as to why you said no.
Right.
If it hasn't been fully adjudicated yet, but it was adjudicated, and then an appeals board reaffirmed those adjudications, and now they're appealing it again. So, you know, at best, this is a dancing around legally of the honest question of, did you have serious and willful safety violations?
And what was one of them?
Shimmick is a big company.
Right.
So, I mean, in one of them, a worker was killed when he was thrown from a forklift or a bulldozer.
Right. Yeah.
In the other, they not once but twice dug into a tunnel and penetrated, I believe, a gas tunnel, which could have very bad circumstances because, and again, I'm not exactly clear on this, I believe that they changed around the job plan of how they were going to do it without having the expert, the engineer, actually look to see if it was all right first, and they managed to foul it up twice.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it was definitely serious and willful is the term that was used.
Now these violations, though, you know, had...
And there were many other violations of lesser import.
But had they sort of disclosed this information and had Muni looked into it and...
Muni did not look into it.
Right.
And it was a matter of public record. It was something that, you know, had Muni been inclined to look into it, it could have been discovered in 5 to 10 minutes.
Now, you know, but if Muni had known and, you know, if the company had, you know, disclosed it, I mean, would these violations be serious enough for it to be a deal breaker on a contract? I mean, do cities, you know, how many construction companies do have, you know, violations? And
that's a great question. Mm-hmm. Within the Examiner article, there are people in the safety regulation industry that had described the company as being a corner cutting company. Other people I've talked to have said that it's a beloved company and it's reliable. So,
right.
so that's,
right.
you know, I'm not in a position to tell you definitively. What I can say is that there's a difference between having these violations and disclosing them and having these violations and answering in what appears to be either a cute or a deliberate opposite of the truth.
Sure.
You know, either they're playing a legalistic game, and you know, I'm not a lawyer, but this seems to be a pretty straightforward question. Were you cited for this? Yes or no? You know, you have to say yes, and here's the mitigating factor. It's under appeal, but they just said no.
All right.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the legal protocol is on answering that question, yes or no, but certainly it seems like they are in spirit, if not in actuality, and maybe both, avoiding the very purpose of the question.
Yeah.
So like if they did that has to factor into the deal, right?
Right.
You know, this is the choice you made and you know, I don't know if we can do business with you. If they'd been straightforward about it, maybe they would have still gotten the contract. I don't know. And again, you know, that may be zero factor in this man's death.
Right.
Even still, the fact that Muni was not fact-checking is not good.
That it really is their job to be looking into this.
It wouldn't have been hard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, God knows they've got a million things to do, but this is 5 minutes for each questionnaire.
Right.
You know, 5 minutes, or you just call up OSHA and say, hey, they answered, you know, this to question 9. What, you know, the Occupational Safe and Health Association here. Is this accurate? Then, well, I don't know. You know, like, then that's as simple as that. You know, I mean, this is what we did. And, you know, I have a degree in history from a public university. And so this is doable.
Okay. So we have all this stuff. We have, mm-hmm. you know, Muni stranding a bunch of writers. They're, you know, they're the customers. You have a construction worker dying, you mm-hmm. know, from a poorly vetted construction company. Muni is in a world of shit. I mean, to really, to say the least.
It's really very frustrating to me because, you know, people seem to, there seems to be almost a pride in, like, denigrating Muni that is not deserved. Muni is you know, it is a repository of amazing tales, and sometimes it fails as a transit agency, but it's still by, you know, just, this is the state of American public transportation. It's going to be one of the 8 or 10 best in all of the country. You know, it's going to be mm-hmm. much better than what you'll find even in the next county.
Right.
You know, legions better. Much more money, much better service, much better equipment, much more thorough lines. You know, the thing about Muni, and this is a line I've used a lot, is that you will bitch and moan about the impracticalities of a voyage that would have been impossible in most of the nation.
Right,
you
that's
know,
true.
You are never more than 2 blocks away from a Muni station. All the buses are GPS equipped now. You'll know when they're coming. And it's like, shit, it's 47 minutes till a bus, but you know that's the case, right?
Right, but you still need the right people orchestrating this incredibly successful.
In my view, this is a deal breaker. You know, the concealment from the public was the final straw to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's malicious behavior,
right? And so, you know, we have all this. You know, we have
and,
all
and,
this.
And if sorry, I'm being circuitous here, but this is really particularly frustrating to me because you're making your dumbest and most hyperventilating critics correct.
Right.
The people who just fulminate about how terrible Muni is and how it's the worst service ever, you know, are now being proven in large part correct.
Right.
And you were attempting to hide behind your own terrible reputation, which I think is overblown, but that's terrible too. So on Muni's side, they knew they had a crappy reputation, I guess, and figured like they could let it slide for 2 months, And so that's just terrible all around, you know, to be hiding behind your terrible reputation and proving your dumbest and most, you know, over the top critics to be correct is just a terrible development. You know, you want people to take Muni. You want people to take public transit. This is, you know, this is not Los Angeles where people, it's like, well, if I had a car, I'd be in a car. You want people to take Muni.
And for all of this stuff that happened, you would think that heads would be rolling, you know, right now.
You would think, but it's not happening.
And whose head would roll if it were to?
Well, I mean, it's Ed Riskin is the man at the top. And Ed is a very sympathetic figure. Ed comes off as a nice guy because Ed is a nice guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he is one of the highest paid public servants in all San Francisco, and his clothes don't fit him properly, and it's something everybody notices.
How much is he paid, by the way?
I think it's $342,000 a year. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, like, that's how much transit directors earn in big cities. It's mm-hmm. it's one of those things, like city manager or, you know, chancellor of a public university. It's just a very, it's a good racket to be in.
Right.
Now, Ed has a lot of attributes that are noteworthy. Ed is a solid manager. He does not come in with a transit background. He comes in with a managerial background. And there's a lot of things that he can do well. However, and this is something I couldn't help but notice, is that he was put in this job by Ed Lee, who also was a competent bureaucrat who did not, you know, who suddenly made a shift into a new job. And so Ed Lee chose someone who seems to be something of a facsimile of himself, which is a competent bureaucrat who does not have a specific expertise for transit. Hmm. And a lot of the criticisms of Ed Riskin are the same that you would hear of Ed Lee, is that he's not a natural leader and that he overempowers his staff and doesn't push back on them.
Right.
And so, again, that's your fault if you are informed like your second in command is doing a poor job or is a liability and you're still signing off and saying that's okay. It comes back on you. I think that's what happens. I think, you know, again, no one has anything nasty to say about Ed's motives. Ed's not making money by making the system bad or anything like that.
How does London Bree feel about him?
I think...
I mean, my understanding penned a letter,
is,
right?
You know, London Breed was a District 5 supervisor before she was mayor, and she had her issues with him then because of specific transit issues. And also, Muni it's the MTA DPT, you know, it's Municipal Transportation Agency and Department of Parking and Traffic. So, like, because we have consolidated the departments, he oversees road repairs and things that. You know, it's a pretty vast job. It touches on a lot of things. So she had her issues with the department even back then, and now as mayor, I think that she's seeing more and is displeased, and she made that very clear in a letter that she wrote to Ed, which was of course publicized and seen by the MTA board, which is the sole body that can hire or fire him, and it expressed grave concern with the delays, and I believe with the lack of communication, but certainly with the delays, which she said could have been mitigated. It expressed grave concern with the lack of vetting of the construction company and the man's death. And then almost like boing out of nowhere, it was the opaque scooter process. Now, this is something I wrote about here. My understanding is that, that scooter process has led to a great deal of anger and rancor from the rideshare companies, Uber, Lyft, others that have, subsidiaries or direct, skin in the game with the scooters and with the scooter companies that came in and disrupted San Francisco, for lack of a better term. And when they got wind through a very good Chronicle article and through other means that they were, that the system seemed to be set up in a way that they were not going to do well because past behavior is factored in.
Right.
And if Uber is attached to your company, then that's not good, determining the morals of your company.
Sure.
My sources have said that calls were made into the mayor's office complaining, and then shortly after this letter came out. Now, again, I people always like to accuse you of you're saying the mayor is controlled by Uber or Lyft, and it's like, no, I'm saying the mayor reacted. And, a letter criticizing Ed Riskin is very well warranted. It behooves us to look at just what got her to write it so quickly at this point in time. But, there are many reasons to write that letter. It just struck me that, scooters was not nearly as weighty an issue as a man dying while working for an under-vetted construction company or the systematic kneecapping of an entire transit system, which was done on the sly.
Right.
That struck me as being more weighty. So, and a lot of people felt that way. Ed Riskin has been... under a lot of scrutiny by the more tech-friendly parts of San Francisco because he is hostile to Uber and Lyft. Mm-hmm. But something even to look into here is his hostility helping San Francisco? you know, if you're a basically a private citizen and you don't like Uber because it's an amoral company and because of its entitled tech behavior,
right.
that's fine. But they're here. Uh-huh. And if your job is to manage the streets, which his is,
right.
is his approach working?
Right.
If you refuse to negotiate with them about what they really want, and we wrote about this on Mission Local, they're kind of proactively taking cab stands, curb space. They want curb space like a cab.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But they don't want to give the city what the city wants, right. which is their mm-hmm. transit data so the city can actually plan, because you've got 47,000, 50,000, God knows how many extra cars in the city, and they're invisible. You know, they don't give you the data. Mm. They're not regulated in the
right.
same way.
Right.
And so, you know, if you're at risk and it's like, hey, you want something from me? Well, I want something from you. This standoffish approach, however, doesn't necessarily work if they're just going to say, well, fuck you, Ed, we're just going to do it. And then, you know, and you still have them double parking and running over cyclists
right.
and just, you know, generally doing what they do. So at this point, you know, his earnestness and righteousness is not to be questioned. His effectiveness in making the streets better with regard to TNCs and his and how that works into whatever vision the transit director has for transit
right.
moving forward, those are valid questions. And I think London Breed is suspicious of that. I don't know if it's because, you know, of her closeness to the TNCs and the scooter people, or just because, you know, you can take a step back and say, this isn't working.
But it sounds like his problems are, you know, run deep. And it sounds like his time might, you know...
I don't think he's going to last yeah. too much longer. London Breed kind of threw a line down where she said, these metrics better improve, or, you know, I'm going to be watching you.
Right.
And he wrote back to her and said, they'll improve in 3 months. You know, I have a plan for this. And it's, you know, of course they'll improve in 3 months, because the numbers are terrible right now, because the system, you know, hamstrung itself intentionally. You know, of course the numbers will improve in 3 months. They really better. but on top right. of that, that's a neat way of saying, just give me 3 more months, you know, and,
right,
you know,
right.
I can print up some resumes. It's, you know, Muni doesn't move particularly fast, and this process doesn't move right. particularly fast. If right. you were to fire Ed Riskin tomorrow, if you were to have security escort him out of One South Van Ness, the problem wouldn't be solved. He's just one man. There's a whole
sure.
Platoon of high-paid, top-flight, you know, MTA employees, and many of them probably are much more problematic, I think, than Ed Riskin.
What is he like, by the way?
He's a nice fella. Everyone talks about what a nice fella he is.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Ed Riskin is motivated. Ed Riskin wants good things. You know, if Ed Riskin was not a nice fella, he'd be out of that job.
Right.
You know, the prior right. director, Nat Ford, was not a nice fella. Nat Ford actually put out a dictum saying that you can't talk to him when he goes into the men's room, because people would just try, hey, how's it going? Like, and he actually so imperious that he actually had a dictum of like, don't speak until spoken to.
I might be kind of that you know, I might turn into that person maybe in the future. But Ed sounds like he's more of like a man of the people. Like he doesn't wear new clothes or something.
He's a humble guy that, you know, despite the fact that he earns a gaudy salary, you know, is not a flashy guy. He rides his bike and he takes transit. The problem isn't Ed Riskin's personality.
Right.
Ed Riskin comes off as a very nice fella, and even folks that I talked to that would like to see him gone, only had nice things to say about him personally and his devotion to the job. You know, that's not the problem. You know, this is not a guy on the make or anything like that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's not like he's going to suddenly like, you know, like if only he had a couple hundred thousand more, he could buy a new closet of suits that don't fit quite properly. You know, and that's, you know, I hate to harp on this because it's so superficial, but it's something that it's almost like conspicuous. In much the same way that somebody dressing, you know, like a prince would be conspicuous consumption, this is conspicuous consumption of the opposite sort.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost, you know, the articles in the Chronicle described him as penitent, and that seems fitting. You know, I mean, you and I have never made even a fraction of what a high-paid transit executive makes, and I would venture to say that our suits fit. So something strange is going on here. And even if you have an aversion to buying expensive clothing, you could then take it to a local tailor and they will make it fit. So like, I'm confused by this. I'm just confused by this.
Well, time will tell whether or not, you know, Ed Riskin will make Muni fit the city of San Francisco and its riders. But until then...
It depends on what you're willing to get. I mean, some people have pointed out to me that Muni was not as... that was worse in the past. But technology was worse in the past. We have much... better buses now. They break down less. They are more efficient. We, you know, are the trains that we are phasing out were terrible, yeah. and they were, but they were much better than the terrible trains we had before. One of Ed Riskin's selling points that he's talked about is that I was able to obtain all these new vehicles, and that's great, but it's also a double-ended thing because we should be doing better.
Yeah.
You know, we are doing better than we were in the past, but we should be doing better still.